This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Welcome to Processing, a show about the intersection between food and grief, with your hosts, Sara Tangora
and Bobby Conforto.
On this show, we're going to really explore where grief and food intersect, how they go hand in hand, different people's experiences with their specific traumas and how food played a part from the beginning to the end of that experience.
And how as individuals, we uniquely process life's traumas and losses through either the longing for, the creating of, the avoiding of, the obsessing over, and the eating of food.
I remember right after Michael died, I still miss him, but I missed him so badly that night that I stopped at the convenience store on the corner and I bought a container of Ben & Jerry's Cherry Garcia. It's too sweet, you know, it's too everything. And I went home with it and I took it to bed and I thought to myself, gee, so this is my first menage a trois after Michael's death. Me, Ben and Jerry, and I ate the entire thing.
What do you think your relationship to food was during times of crisis?
I think that my sister and I use food to reward ourselves.
I wish I had something more interesting to say, but definitely like spaghetti and meatballs and chocolate cake.
My mom still can't eat Rugola. It makes her too sad. I've also experienced a lot of loss, as has Bobby, and I think we really wanted to find a way where we could like work together. There's something that feels very compelling about doing a project with you, Mom, as just kind of a missing piece in life and just something we've always wanted to do but not known quite how.
Can't think of anything better myself.
I think that, I mean, any conversation about grief, I think, prepares everyone for grief because there are so few conversations about grief. It's why I think that what you guys are doing is so important.
Welcome to HR and Happy Hour. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, and somewhere is Bushwick. I'm Kat Johnson, HRN's Communications Director, and your co-host of HR and Happy Hour. And thank you. Wow, what a lovely audience. Wow. I appreciate it. I'm here with my co-host, Hannah Forden, HRN's Program Manager. Hello, Hannah.
Happy Thursday.
This week
I don't get any
short.
Applause. I'm sorry. I'm upset.
You got the sad trombone.
It's fine. And introducing Matt Patterson, who apparently is turning the audience against me.
he wields too much power.
It's true. It's gone straight to my head.
He really wields too much power. We also have our intern, Ruby Walsh, in the studio with us. Hi, Ruby.
Hi.
Thanks for coming and hanging out.
Thanks for having me.
What have you been up to today, Ruby?
You have to come to a mic.
Not learning proper mic placement.
That was exciting.
Nope.
I've been working on a script.
What's your story this week for Meet and Three?
For next week, it's on Brexit and what post-EU life will look like there in food shops and for the agriculture industry.
We are going to talk a little bit more about trade and tariffs in a bit. That's a teaser.
Yeah.
And Meet and Three is going to be doing a whole episode on it. So stay tuned. Stay tuned. Okay, today's guests, we're so excited to have them. And there's a special occasion for it because our first guest is Jimmy Carboni of Beer Sessions Radio. And
hey guys.
He has a very important event coming up on Saturday. Welcome, Jimmy.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much. You know, from my old days running Jimmy's Number 43 and Food Karma NYC events, we're in our 12th year of a Cassoulet Cook-Off, which is now called the 12th Annual Brooklyn Cassoulet Cook-Off.
Whoop, whoop.
And that's jimmysnumber43.com this Saturday.
10 years. Wow.
Yeah, it's something, like many things, just like this radio network, it kind of started with a few diehard people. And who would ever think that cassoulet would be something that chefs year after year would get interested in? And it keeps going. You say cassoulet, there's chefs that are just learning to make French. There's a chef named Casey Boyle, and he is interested in the cuisine of Jura in France.
Mm-hmm.
And he's making everything Jura. Weird apple dishes, you know, vin jaune, whatever the wine is from there. That's so he's exciting. Cooking. He's cooking something with foie gras too, which is kind of controversial these days. So
yeah, yeah, timely and controversial. Well, we'll talk more about that in a minute. Our second guest today is Joan Gonzalez. Welcome.
Hello. How are you?
I didn't say your full name. If you want to say your full name,
you were afraid to.
I was.
My name is Joan. Joan Gonzalez.
Got it. All right.
And
so,
who is the special person on your lap?
It is Amanda. It's my daughter. It's 5 months old. And you can hear some... It's he. It's she.
There's also Daisy Dog in the studio. So you're going to be hearing lots of jingling collars and keys and things.
No, no, no. None of that's actually there. It's all amazing sound design.
Yes, correct. How do you do it, Matt? How do you do it?
Faking babies all day.
So Joan is the founder of Tierra Colada olive oil brand.
Yes.
Tell us more about that.
Well, Tierra Callada was founded like 5 years ago. It was a project that I had in my mind during a lot of years because I come in from an olive oil family. We have olive trees in Spain, in the south of Spain, in Jaén. But I never worked in the olive oil industry. It was just 5 years ago when I knew I was coming here. I decided to bring a little piece of one of our treasures in Spain, that is the olive oil.
Nice. Well, we'll talk more about that and sort of the state of olive oil right now when we get into our interview part of the show. But first, we have a few announcements we want to make. We just talked about Castle Lake Cook-Off. We're going to talk more about it soon. But another event coming up that's within the realm of HRN is this Monday, January 27th. Sherry Bear is bringing her show, All in the Industry, to life with the Host Summit and Social. It's going to be, like I said, Monday at the William Vale Hotel in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And the programming and the food both look equally incredible. She's been doing this show for 7 years on HRN, so you can imagine she's had a lot of amazing guests over the year, and many of them are going to be coming and doing speeches and panels and Q&As, and it's going to be a real opportunity for people to learn about hospitality, operations, services, and technology, HOST, Host Summit. So there are still some tickets left, and I believe that on Saturday we're going to send out an email with a code, a ticket code in there. So if you're still looking for a ticket, let us know. We can get you a little discount as for being a friend and family of HRN.
And by let us know, you mean like sign up for our email list, right?
Sign up for our email list or like at us on social media and I'll give it to you.
And also coming soon, this past weekend, Kat and I were out in San Francisco for the Good Food Awards and Good Food Mercantile, visiting our good friends out there. And it's their 10th year as well, which is really exciting. Everyone's having big decade celebrations. And we have the entire Good Food Awards recorded, which is a really amazing, compulation of folks from the food industry. Michael Pollan spoke, Alice Waters, Dolores Huerta. So we're going to have an unedited version of that coming out early next week, as well as interviews from Good Food Mercantile with some of the kind of most risk-taking and exciting makers in the industry who are all really committed to keeping their food good, clean, and fair. So our friends from Gustiamo will be making an appearance, our friends from Lady Edison Ham, Vermont Cheese Council. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Stay tuned for that in the HRN On Tour feed.
And our last announcement is that we have launched a couple of new shows in the past couple of weeks. The first one you heard a trailer for at the beginning of this show. It's called Processing. It's a show about the intersection of food and grief, hosted by a mother and daughter duo, Zara Tangora and Bobby Conforto.
It's incredible.
It's really, really amazing. It's unlike anything we've ever done on our network, and I'm just really excited about the deep conversations, real conversations that they're going to be having with people about how, you know, grieving doesn't necessarily just mean that you've had like a loss of a person. It can mean you can grieve about a lot of things, and food so often goes hand in hand with those emotions.
So it's the most universal
combination
of concepts, and somehow I feel like most people don't necessarily make that connection.
Yeah.
But Bobby and Zara, as like a chef and a grief counselor, can kind of bring it all into focus, mm-hmm. and it's beautiful. It's going to make you cry.
Yeah. And then our other show that we just launched, we are collaborating with our friends over at The Feed Feed, which is like the world's largest crowdsourced cooking platform. They really sort of jumped on the rise of cooking, sharing our cooking joys through social media. And that show is going to be looking at how, you know, small and large sort of like media influences on the web have built community. And so I think their first couple episodes are out, and it's going to be sort of an in-depth look at when you see your favorite home cook or chef online, like what is sort of the process behind building that community. So go check out both of those shows. We're very, very excited about them.
Okay, should we do some headlines?
Let's do it.
Oh, God.
Why, thank you. Okay, so this week on The Grape Nation, Sam Benrubi spoke with Andre Mack about his journey from military school to the world of wine. Andre was the first African-American to be named Best Young Somme by the Chaîne des Rôtisseries.
Wow, good job.
Sometimes I have to go full French, otherwise I just can't say it at all. And he hasn't slowed down since. Listen to hear about his new endeavors as a graphic artist, wine store owner, and author. And we love Andre Mack, and you should check out that episode.
And Steve Palmer was on Opening Soon this week to talk about restaurant culture and sobriety. He is a managing partner of Indigo Road with 20-plus restaurants across the South. And he's the founder of a nonprofit called Ben's Friends. We're big fans of everything that Steve Palmer does.
We're Steve's friends.
Yep.
And Moonlin Tsai was featured on The Line this week. She's the co-owner of the James Beard semifinalist restaurant Kopi Tiam on the Lower East Side. On the show, she talked to Eli about what it was like to grow up in restaurants and how she chose her business partner, which is always, I feel like, an interesting conversation. More on that in Opening Soon.
Yeah.
That story was wild, too, because she chose that partner very fast and walked into Kopi Tiam just like to have lunch one day off of the Google.
Wow.
And then ends up, you know, working with them. So it's pretty cool.
That's amazing. Crazy.
Everything in your life is a matter of timing, right?
Yeah, fair enough. All right. So those are our headlines. Make sure you check out all of our shows, all roughly 35 weekly shows. We're in a new season now, so there's a lot of great stuff coming your way. We just had a chat with our friend Jin Liuzzi about she's about to hit 200 episodes of Tech Bites. I mean, wow. Speaking of milestones.
Yeah, I feel like everyone's been having massive milestones this year.
Jimmy had like one of the biggest milestones in our history last year.
500 episodes.
I mean, no big deal.
500!
Jimmy, what was that like? What has it been like to make 500 episodes of Beer Sessions Radio?
Well, it's like when you're an actor and you're in a show, you get a rush because you got the show and you're doing rehearsals. But then you realize, wow, this isn't just like a 3-month run. And after 3 months or 6 months, you have to kind of suck wind and be like, whoa, mm-hmm. I have to like keep a level head and keep this going. And mm-hmm. I just wanted to give a big shout out to you guys. I mean, you, the administration here and the studio people have been so supportive. So thank you guys. Nice. Couldn't do it without you guys.
How many different engineers have you worked with over your tenure?
Well, if anyone remembers Jack Inslee, there was Jack.
How could we forget?
Jack Inslee.
And David, and now Matt, and then probably a few others.
Probably a few others, yeah.
This has been a great network. You guys really have a very stable crew, and I love it.
Yes.
Love Heritage Radio Network.
Well, we're so lucky to have you in our family, and there's just so much amazing information and like celebration of beer in the archive of your show. If people haven't listened to all 500 episodes, I think it's start from number one.
It's time to start binging podcast.
Yes.
Come on. I mean, I feel like you've had almost everyone in the beer world on that show at some point or another. Like, if not, like you're basically like the Kevin Bacon game with Jimmy on Beer Sessions would be like only 1 degree of separation. Period with anyone.
6 degrees of Jimmy Carboni.
Yeah. You could circle back to him several times with 6 degrees.
I will say there's a movie out called Beer Boom, the movie. And they're going to be on our show next week, January 28th, 5 p.m. on Heritage Radio Network. And these guys, this labor of love, they took about 5 or 6 years to make this movie. And I saw a secret preview of it last night. And every single person in that documentary has been on Beer Sessions Radio. So
you had
it's like
first.
Old friends. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like craft beer has like, you know, it's at this point, and of course I'm in a Brooklyn bubble. We all realize that we're in a bubble a bit being in New York. But like, craft beer feels like almost kind of mainstream at this point. So like, what are you seeing now as being sort of the new and the interesting things happening in beer?
I mean, that's something you can listen to Beer Sessions Radio because everyone has their own different take on. Mm. But for me, it's beer. Beer's not new. You know, beer goes back to the, you know, early days of civilization. And what came first, beer or bread, you know, when people were first dealing with grains. I think what's new is what's old. You know, it's some of the most experimental brewers I know who've, like Evan at Plan B Farmhouse up in Poughkeepsie, New York. He came into an old farm. He's doing some of the most traditional methods of like wild fermenting and all this stuff. Suddenly, he was back in Dusseldorf, Germany, drinking alt beers, which is one of the old traditional styles of beer. So it's like I can see, you know, pioneers like Evan looking back to the old world, and that it never gets old. That's the thing with beer.
That makes me so happy just to like know that, you know, we're not just trying to innovate, but that we're like appreciating the way things have been done for so long.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the other big stories would probably be people who are trying to push to make beer, like get local ingredients, and that's really just a return to the old too. It's like people didn't used to ship things across the world, right? And so now you've got people like Strom Rope who are making all New York malt, New York hop beers. Like that's on the up and up, I think,
yeah,
around the country.
Exciting.
I mean, we Matt's great because Matt's been our engineer now for over a year, so
but he's
heard all the
beer
episodes. But like you know, and the trend in the story is there's a lot of new podcasts that are covering you know the business of beer, and it seems that that's the only area where people are spending money, and so we kind of shy away from that. But you know, everyone wants to talk about what hard seltzer's doing. Should every brewery make a hard seltzer?
Oh, that's interesting.
And we kind of stay away. That's not really a Beer Sessions Radio. We're like, okay, you can talk about mainstream stories. We're going to talk about really good beer and the people that make it.
But it's interesting, like, you sometimes, like, do want to get into that conversation of, like, because we did that with Hardcore. Mm-hmm. And, like, in Cider, it's, like, how marketing is such a big thing there because the cider market is smaller but growing, smaller than the beer market. And so you have a lot of people trying to be very strategic and target the people that are drinking the hard seltzer and the White Claws.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because, like, you know, from the cider perspective or the beer perspective, it's like, let's capture those people and let's bring them in to drink what we think is good.
I mean, we're drinking, like, you know, Joanne at the bar earlier, he wanted a pale ale. And Roberta's on draft always has a great selection of beer, but they didn't have a pale ale. And right now we're drinking, it's an orange
Grenache. Yeah.
Grenache. So it's, to me, it's a rosé.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain things that you want to drink. I want to drink a rosé today, and at the bar I wanted a pale ale. I don't need to have like 30 different you know, types of a beer.
It's like quality over quantity, always.
And classic styles, you know.
And classic, yeah, because you know what you're getting. I mean, there's a time and a place for crazy sour, don't get me wrong, but you don't want it all the time. The peach, yeah. So, Joanne, tell us a bit more kind of about your family history with olive oil and like, why you decided to sort of come back to it.
Well, my family has olive tree for generation. That's the way that it used to happen. Always has been part of my childhood. And always in my mind is with something telling me that I have to take care of that.
Yeah.
Because actually, I mean, the model in Spain, in Jaén mainly, that is the region that the olive oil is coming from, is like cooperatives. And the cooperative is a really nice proposal because every guy in the cooperative belongs part of the business. That's very good, but at the same time, it doesn't work very well when. It works very well when the target is to produce olive oil, and we are doing in Spain, in Jaén, a lot of good olive oil lately. But it's not as good when you have to commercialize it.
Interesting. Why?
Why? Because we are talking about Jaén. Jaén is beautiful. I love Jaén. I love the people of Jaén, but it's traditional. I mean, it's like countryside. It's kind of the poorest region in Spain, so... Well, Amanda, you want something to say? She has something to say. She's not agree.
She can't wait to get to work in the olive oil business.
She's like, we got to go get the olive oil.
Yeah. But historically, they have sold the olive oil bulk.
Right. You know, okay. Not creating a brand, not creating something.
It's a lot of little special. Decisions you have to make.
Yeah.
And it's hard for a lot of people to make decisions.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was one of the of my goals.
We're going to see if you want someone to hold Amanda for a minute. She likes to be moving around. Yeah.
An option is Team Ruby and Matt. Yeah,
I can Ruby and Matt are going to babysit during this.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Sorry, Amanda.
Amanda's like, I don't have time to just sit here and listen to everyone talk. She's much happier now.
Well, so that was one of the weakness of the olive oil in Spain.
That makes sense, yeah.
That we were not able to give it the value that it has. And lately, the last 10 years, we have reached a point when we have an excellent quality. As good as the Italian or even better, and we are doing an amazing olive oil. But still, we don't have the ability to sell it, to promote it, to... And all this work, it was in my mind from the beginning, no? We got a precious treasure. We have a really good quality now, and we are not able to sell it. We have to sell it in bulk. We have to sell it for Italians mainly. And it doesn't make sense. I mean, if you have something very good, sell it yourself and let the people know that it's coming from you, no? from your...
So what are the barriers to, like, reaching a broader market for Spanish olive oil? What's keeping you from reaching the rest of the world?
Why I'm focusing in the United States?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you were saying it's mostly being sold in, like, in Spanish olive oil is mostly being sold in Italy. I was just curious.
Yes, well, it's... I mean, when I was telling this, it was mainly the Italians go to Spain, buy the olive oil bulk in tons, in, like, containers... Bring in to Italy, and they bottle
like
it in Italy.
Bulk commodity product.
Yeah.
So your brand now, you're able to sort of sell more retail because you're building the brand, getting away from bulk a little bit.
Yes.
And
yes,
now you're targeting the U.S.
Yes, that was the whole point. And
yeah.
Retail and also restaurants, but looking for people that are want quality and they want a different product, and Tierra Gallada is what is the proposal of Tierra Gallada. Mm-hmm. No? We are getting one of the best olive oil in the world. We are trying to bring it at a reasonable price. I mean, I don't need the fanciest bottle in the market.
Right.
I don't need to spend $5 in a bottle. If I can spend 50 cents and bring the best product. I mean, if you lick my bottle, it looks beautiful. Well, this is what I think. But trying to keep away all these things evolving high-quality products that make it more expensive and actually it doesn't belong to the product itself, no? And trying to focus just in the product itself and giving, like, a nice coat and nice clothes. But keeping in mind that what I want to bring is the olive oil, not the labor or not the bottle.
So we mentioned at the top of the show, but we were going to talk a little bit about tariffs and trade. You're being affected, being a Spanish olive oil producer, affected by a 25% tariff that was enacted last year.
Yeah.
How has that affected the business?
Well, from the beginning until the end, I mean, it's totally affecting. And it's making me much more difficult to do everything, no? Because actually, the problem is the 25%. There's the tariff by itself. It has no sense. It's a tariff coming from an argue between the aeronautic industry. And at the end, we have been involved, people that do olive oils. It makes no sense at all.
You're like, what do I have to do with airplanes? What's happening?
I have no stocks of Airbus or Boeing, so I mean...
You're like, I'm definitely not invested in Boeing.
Yeah, no, totally.
Nope.
No. So from the beginning, it's an unfair tariff. And they are not just unfair and also random. For example, just Spain... Or just the olive oil coming from Spain is having this tariff, not the Italian or the Greek.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the other products in Italy are having and the French none. And in the end, if you can read underlines, we say that in Spanish, I don't know.
Read between the lines, yeah.
Read between the lines. is just the president of the administration trying to do, not talking with the European Union as an entity, mm-hmm. trying to debilitate the European Union, looking for connecting with Congress, with the government, and trying to develop an argue between countries, not mm-hmm. with the European Union. So, I mean, well, is that the way the real politics yeah. is done? And we are in the aggressive politics, and that's what we have.
It's unfortunate that, like, we're all being caught in the middle of it.
Yeah, consumers, yeah. importers.
Totally.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's take a really quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the Castellet cook-off that we're mm-hmm. all going to be hanging out at in a couple days. I'm so pumped. Okay, we'll be right back with more HR and Happy Hour.
Woo!
My name is Brandon Boyd, co-owner of Roberta's, a super-duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Thank you, Roberta's. We're back. We've got a bottle of wine we're pouring and one crazy dog in the studio. Or do we? I don't know.
Maybe it's all Matt.
Maybe it's just Matt. All right, so, Joanne, you're going to be cooking a cassoulet on Saturday. Is that right?
Sure. Totally. Well, I'm going to be with Chef Rafael de la Rosa, who is like chef of cuisine in Mineta Tavern. And he's going to be the master and commander of the operation. And I'm going to be the guy that serves the food. I was going to do it by myself because I love to cook and I can a pretty decent cooker. But when he told me that he was to be involved, it was like, well, of course.
You're like, that's easier for me.
Totally.
You know, I met you last year, and we have another friend who writes for a Spanish publication here in New York. Hmm. And you said, wow, we really want to do the Castellet yeah. cook-off. But what about Castellet, mm. you know, inspires you? Why do you want to cook that?
I mean, I love. We call it in Spain like spoon dishes. I love them in the winter. It's like our surf of...
It's the best.
Yeah. I always... This stews, like, takes a lot of time and it's different cocción involves. I mean, it's always like kind of an chemistry alchemist. So I always love this kind of dishes.
I have a question for you guys. In a general sort of cassoulet stew question... Do you consider thyme to be an ingredient in a cassoulet?
You mean thyme, the herb?
No, thyme.
Oh, thyme.
T-I-M-E. Like the time spent making the dish. Is that an essential ingredient in the recipe?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's like you can...
You can't rush beans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's also, you know, things
it's time
rest,
because you have
like,
to do things in advance. You have to, maybe you
you're making
to
a
put
duck confit.
I mean, this we're talking about date. Can we just like go back a little bit for people that don't know what a cassoulet is?
Yeah.
Talk about the process. I mean, we're talking about days if you're doing it from scratch.
Well, one of our chefs, Bretton Scott, who's been a HRN
yes,
host,
yeah.
Well, on Saturday, he picked up duck from Hudson Valley Duck in Union Square Green Market, and he started by butchering it, and he's been making a confit since at least Tuesday. So that just gives you a sense of how much time it takes to do it right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And someone else, Betty Kalin, who's OME Catering, she picked up her beans yesterday. And Chef Jesse Jackson, who's has like a New Orleans-style red bean cassoulet, he also started a chicken confit yesterday. So.
Wow. Mm.
So at least 3 days in advance.
At least, yeah.
And actually, it's not just the time that it takes you to prepare. It's this kind of dishes they gain when, I mean, it's better if you have it the next day you do it because all the flavors gets together. So it's not just prepare it. It's when they are done, if you wait, it's even better.
Even better.
And you know, it's like to me, it's old world cooking. The way I grew up with my family from Italy, we never called them leftovers. It was like yeah. you knew that right. sauce or whatever you made the next day was going to be better, so you made it in advance. You didn't call them leftovers.
I worked for a restaurant group in Atlanta, and one of the restaurants, their soup special, they actually called the soup special yesterday's soup. Because they were like, we always make the soup you're eating at least the day before because it's better that way. Hmm. I think anything like a soup or a stew, that's true with.
Does olive oil play any sort of important role in your cassoulet?
Sure, sure, totally. I mean, we are going to do the focaccia. We have done a focaccia.
Ooh.
Actually, this is going to be totally crust.
Yum.
Because it's going to be like breadcrumbs. But
Hannah's on the guest list, too.
So. Yeah.
I'm ready.
With piqual olive oil. Piqual is kind of a strong olive oil, robust. It's super earthy. It's bitter. It's spicy. So it's got a lot of strength to the product. And all the process is with extra virgin olive oil. All the cooking, when we are doing the rabbit, we put olive oil. We are going to put a little bit of olive oil on top. It's going to be arbequina that is more delicate, just to give a little for sweetness to the cassoulet. So, of course, you cannot understand Spanish cuisine. And in this case, cassoulet, and we can say that cassoulet and Spanish cuisine is pretty much the same because mm-hmm. we have the same in Spain and France. We share a lot of...
You share a large border.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't you love that concept of spoon food?
I do.
I love that.
I love that.
That's all I ever cook, I feel like. It's just one big pot of
honestly,
mush.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I just feel like I usually will go to Heritage Foods and I'll get the sausages and the beef stew meat. I always go for those kinds of meat, the cuts of meat. I'm never really going for pork chops or steaks. Mm-hmm. I like to make a stew or a braise, yeah. Something like that. That's like comforting to me.
It's part of my Sunday like recharge routine is to cook something for at least 3 or 4 hours. It's like meditation time.
We just got some friends who got married. We bought them a Le Creuset as a wedding gift, and they got it and they were like, what's the best thing to make in this? And I was like, I don't know, everything.
Literally everything.
It's what I cook everything in.
It's fun. In the early days of Cassoulet Cook-Off, chefs like Kathy Irway, who's also got a show on HRN.
She has like one of the most iconic.
Come in with
her yellow Le Creuset. Like she, that's like the best commercial for a Le Creuset, I have to say. It's like a beat up, well-loved yellow Le Creuset.
May I ask, one of the key ingredients of cassoulet are beans. Mm-hmm. And I'm always curious about, every chef has a different approach. Like the chef who's cooking the Jura style is using tarbay beans, which is like the traditional style. But, you know, here in New York, we have Grow NYC, you know, Grains Project. There's a lot of Northeast regional beans. Right now there's like pintos and yellow-eyed peas.
Yeah.
But one of our chefs has Rancho Gordo sending him yellow-eyed beans. Yeah. What beans is your chef using?
Yes, we are. Actually, I brought them from Spain. I should not say that in public because in the custom the guy told me any food and it was not at
this
all.
This educational purpose.
You cannot do it.
We've been known to smuggle some food.
Yeah, but
what are you
we are coming.
About?
It's coming from Spain and it's faves. They are called faves. They are from the north of Spain, from Asturias, and they are kind of an expensive legume, but really tender, super good with. The skin is super, super thin, so you cannot even... And I think it's super important in a cassoulet or in this kind of dishes, what you choose. No? You have to have good stuff because it's the beginning of the dish.
Kat, you're going to be a judge. Judge is the hardest job at these type of events because, honestly, between you and me, I usually very quickly find the one or two dishes that I really like, and then I only eat those. As the judge, unfortunately, you're going
to
try all 10.
You have to have some
10.
Restraint, yeah. I'm prepared.
How are you going to do that?
I'm prepared for that. So, Jimmy, tell me kind of like, I'm going to go in, I'm going to go to different tables and try, or like, will I be able to sort of get
Well, you'll
all?
Be with a stable of judges, so you'll meet some fun people like Kat Kradick, who's the Savoir Test Kitchen person, and Serena Dye, Eater New York person, and Diane Stemple, who's a host on Cut It and the Curd here. So there'll be a nice group of people and some chefs as well. Chef Eric Howard, who is a New York City firefighter, who's been on some, I think, CHOP shows. But you kind of... Go. You might pair with one or two other chefs. And you get there a little early. You get early admin at 12:30.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be efficient about it.
Yeah, you go around and you keep your notes. And then the fun part is the judges. These type of events, it's everyone's event. Like Juwan came in and came to some of the events. And you realize that, wow, this is a place for him and his olive oil, but it's also like a way for him to build community. Mm-hmm. So he has friends from Spain and New York that will come to the event. But now he's working with, you should tell us more actually about the chef you have. So it's Rafa De La Rosa. He's the chef de cuisine at Minetta Lane. Oh. And that's pretty cool. Yeah. And he's actually doing a whole program where he's gone to Central Market in Houston with Chef Rafa. So he's really trying to expand people's understandings of what you can do with olive oil. Because I thought, to me, I'm like, olive oil for Cassoulet, like, why would you do that? You're not a bean company. You're not a meat company. Mm-hmm. But, that's your inspiration.
Yeah, that's Chef Rafael de la Rosa. He's a great chef. He's been here like 5 years. 6 years, actually. He's working now, as you said, in chef of cuisine in Minetta Tavern. And he's from Seville, but he loves food and he loves everything. When I told him about the cassoulet, he was like super excited about it. And also, of course, me to have him on my side to do that. He has a really good background in Spain, in Seville, is where he's coming from. And you're gonna try. You have to come to the cassoulet Saturday. What can you do better than a cassoulet?
Where can people find tickets?
Jimmy's number 43.com. Jimmy's NO43.com.
Get on
Eventbrite tickets.
I don't know what you're doing if you're not gonna come eat a lot of cassoulet in January. Like,
it's the best cure for your seasonal depressive disorder. Yeah. Is eat a lot of beans.
Everyone
makes
there.
Beans. There's a couple barbecue entries. Randall's Barbecue and Gentle Giant Barbecue from the New York area. They're both kind of making a dish as well.
Nice.
Yum.
Okay, so Dwan has to step out because Amanda needs him.
Yeah.
And we are all here for Amanda. Let's be honest.
She's our guest
for the
of
future. We're here for the future.
But the last thing we're going to do, and feel free to like jump out whenever you need, mm-hmm. but we have a little bit of trivia we're going to play at the very end.
Totally.
And you guys are all on a team, so feel free to just shout them out. Our theme for trivia this week is questions about French cooking, cassoulet being a traditional French dish. Okay. Question number one. How many snails are consumed in France every year? Also known as escargot. Is it 100,000, 500,000, or over a million?
Over
a million.
Definitely.
No. It's a 500,000.
And who's counting?
You're going to say something?
Yeah. The snails.
The snails. the snail board.
The snail association. Of.
What about the wild snails that people catch in their backyard?
Yeah, we're not counting those. No, so you're probably right.
No one's keeping track.
All right, question number two. What sandwich uses a baguette as its bread? Is it a Vietnamese banh mi, a Mexican semita, or the French croque monsieur?
Baguette, the Vietnamese.
Yes, banh mi. Yep, correct.
But isn't it a different, isn't it more like po' boy bread? Isn't it like a different?
It is slightly different, but I guess like as we're going on shape. Because like in New Orleans, they're like the banh mi bread is very specific and it's like very light. So I... Bonus points.
I don't know.
Depends if you have a good bakery nearby or not.
Fair enough. All right, question number three. What are three vegetables that are used in the French flavor base known as a mirepoix?
Three, of course, onion.
Yes.
Pepper.
That's Trinity.
That's sofrito.
Or sofrito, yeah.
I was going to do
onion. Celery and carrot.
Correct.
Carrot.
Yes. In Spain, it's onion.
And in pepper.
Yeah. Yes. And carrot
and in New Orleans,
garlic,
Trinity.
Of course,
yeah. Bell peppers.
Garlic.
Which, like, I don't love bell peppers, so whatever. All right, question number four. Which of these is not on the menu at the French McDonald's? Pommes frites sauce, croque McDough, or McDew, or Le Petit Poulet, the little chicken. Which one's not on the menu? So two of those are right, one of those is wrong.
Wait, I'm sorry. I need you to say that.
Say it again.
Pommes frites sauce, croque McDew, or Le Petit Poulet, the little chicken.
Pommes frites sauce.
That is on the menu.
Oh, it is.
The croque.
That also is on the menu.
What's on the other?
It's the little chicken. Le Petit Poulet.
Le Petit Poulet.
You'd think that would make sense because it sounds the most like a thing that's normally. It sounds like chicken nuggets.
All right. I thought pommes frites. I thought that was Belgian, but
yeah, right. All right, last question, and this is my favorite. What hobby did Julia Child take part in before she found French cooking? Is it creative writing, college basketball, or cheerleading?
What up, tall girls?
No idea.
Sounds like a college basketball, right?
That is correct. Julia Child, the basketball player. All right. Thank you both so much for being on the show. You won trivia. Castly Cook-Off. Go to jimmysnumber43.com.
And guess what? Since we won the trivia, we got a free bottle of Tierra Colada. Thank you, Juwan.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you, Juwan. Thank you, Jimmy. Thank you, Matt, Ruby, Amanda, who's been so patient with us.
Yeah.
Thanks, Hannah.
Thanks, Catherine.
All right, we'll be back next week. HR and Happy Hour is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Sherry Bayer, the host of All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm thrilled to let you know about HOST, Summit Plus Social, a new conference for and about the hospitality industry, taking place Monday, January 27th, 2020, at the William Vale in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, New York City. Based on my All in the Industry show, HOST, which stands for Hospitality Operations, Services, and Technology, will bring behind-the-scenes talent in hospitality to the forefront in a live format, featuring guests from some of my most popular episodes, including Drew Nieporant, Rita Jamay, Crystal Mobiyeni, J.J. Johnson, and Jeff Gordonier. Our event will include intimate panels, one-on-one interviews, industry news discussions, curated lunch conversations, and more. Plus, of course, we will have outstanding food and drink throughout the day, including an energizing closing reception. For more information and tickets, please go to allintheindustry.com. And also, please follow us at All Industry on Instagram and Twitter. I hope you will join us in celebrating our dynamic hospitality industry. Many thanks.